apologies.
Okay, we'll do, Chairperson. If I can just, I know Ms. Mamakhan is also supposed to be on the platform. She did indicate that she would attend, but she hasn't logged on just yet. sorry, if I can just, so if Indy can maybe just touch base with her. And then in terms of the members in attendance, Chair, we've got yourself, Honorable Memang, Honorable Dango, Honorable Mashuri, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Lant, Honorable Brautuses. And then we don't have any apologies aside from the standing apology from Mr. Lantzman. And then in terms of our colleagues present, I think the rest of our colleagues are still logging on, but we've got our committee assistant, Mr. Bazir, the NCOP procedural table official, Ms. Shamara Ali, and then I'm sure the rest of our colleagues will log on as we begin the meeting, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me then take this opportunity to formally open the meeting. And welcome honorable members, honorable minister. We have earlier heard that you'll be joining us at 11. We appreciate that you are here now because we are to start with the report. Greetings also to the management of Department of Employment and Labor, members of or staff of the committee and staff of parliament, media and guests. Good morning. Let us just a few minutes before I hand over to the minister, honourable Boshoff. I don't know if she indicated where she'll be flying from.
It did indicate that she'd be attending, but I just I don't think we've got confirmation yet as to where she'd be flying from, Ms. Boshoff. For the tourism in Dhaka.
Yes, Mardia, when Enrico initially sent out the invitation, I replied to him. So he's got everything, but for ease of reference, from Nelspruit, there's a direct flight to Durban and return. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. In terms of apologies, any apologies?
No, Chairperson. And my co-committee secretary, Ms. Denise Zulu, she submitted an apology, Chairperson. And then we've got the, as I indicated, the standing apology from Mr. Mr. Lantzman as well, Chair.
All right. No, thank you so much. I was called by the DG of the Department of Employment and Labor much earlier this morning. He's got a domestic matter to attend to. So you won't be joining us. I will now hand over to, before we hand over to the minister, let's start then with the report of the two bills. Just those sections that members of the public raised, and also the responses by Parliament, Constitutional and Legal Services Office, as well as the DTIC.
Okay. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, Chairperson, this report is the report by the Select Committee on, Enrico, if you can maybe just admit people to the meeting so I don't continually have this pop up.
Okay, Maria, no problem.
Thank you. Okay, Chairperson and members, this is the report by the Select Committee on Trade, Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour on the public hearings and responses from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill and the Copyright Amendment Bill. I'm just going to quickly briefly go through the introduction. The Select Committee on Trade and Industry, having heard oral submissions on the above-mentioned bills on the 21st of February, 7th and 14th of March, and having received responses from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on the 18th of April 2023, reports as follows. The report covers the brief introduction to the bill in terms of the Section 79(1) process in terms of the Constitution, the legislative intention of the bill. If I can just go through the attendance by members, those members who have attended, we have, a mistake out the chairperson because the chairperson was on sick leave during that time. We've got Honourable Moimang, Honourable Dango, Honourable Mamarahana, Honourable Mashodi, Honourable Boshoff, Honourable Lant, and Honourable Pratasif. In terms of the select committee consultation, interested parties that responded to the public consultation initiative included members of the public, individual and corporate creators, local and international organizations, academics, as well as industry and professional associations. A total of 65 submissions were received. And then there is a brief list of all the stakeholders who had actually made submissions to the committee. And then that's just a list of those associations and stakeholders who made oral submissions to the committee over the 3 days of public hearing. The report is essentially divided into three sections. Part A covers issues stakeholders raised in terms of the Copyright Amendment Bill. Part B covers issues that stakeholders raised in terms of the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. And then Part C covers responses by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, as well as by Parliamentary Legal Services, who gave input in terms of constitutional issues that were raised during the course of the public hearings. If I can just cover the main issues that were raised, and I mean, this is just a very high-level a summary of the main issues that were raised. Members will understand I'm not going to go through the report page by page because the report is 85 pages long. The main areas that were raised, particularly in terms of the Copyright Amendment Bill, was concerns raised around definitions, concerns raised around fair use and fair dealing. This is just a very lengthy report, so it's difficult to just kind of go straight into it. Concerns raised about exceptions and limitations, personal use and adaptation of formats for personal use, temporary reproduction and adaptation, libraries, archives, museums and galleries, artistic works in public spaces, persons with disability, parallel imports, statutory licenses for reproduction and translation, orphan works, technological protection measures and copyright management information, absence of effective legal remedies to combat online copyright infringement, ephemeral rights, ownership of copyright in commissioned works. So those are just some of the few issues that were raised in terms of the high-level just a brief summary of some of the issues, obviously not all of the issues that were raised by stakeholders when they made submissions in terms of the Copyright Amendment Bill. In terms of the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, there were also concerns raised with regards to definitions. There was also concerns raised around the promotion of performers' moral and economic rights. And then there were also concerns raised around penalties for non-compliance with registration requirements, avoidance of double payment to a performer for the same act, concerns raised with regards to ministers' regulatory powers and compulsory contractual terms, and then also with regards to technological protection measures. What happened thereafter, Part C of the report essentially covers inputs from Parliament's Constitutional and Legal Services and then responses from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition to the issues raised during public hearings. At this point, I just want to note that from the onset, when we received on the date of the closing date for submissions, which was the 27th of January, all the responses, including the written all the written responses were sent to the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. So in the department's responses, they were actually responding to all the issues that were raised. So in terms of the inputs from Parliament's Constitutional and Legal Services, the main areas that Advocate Fundamerva covered in a response were focused on issues of constitutionality, compliance with parliamentary processes, compliance with legal drafting principles, and whether the words of the bills give effect to the policy decided by the committee. And then that just is a brief summary of the issues that she flagged in terms of those areas. And then further on, we go to she, particularly in terms of the blind essay judgment, she made certain proposals to give effect to the blind essay versus Minister of Trade and Industry Constitutional Court's judgment. And these are the proposals that she made to give effect to that judgment. And these are the list of proposed amendments that she made. And then the last section of the report covers the responses by the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. And what they did is that they noted the public comment and they made a direct response to each and every one of the public comments. And that is my brief summary of the report, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madia Solomons. I don't know if there are any comments from honorable members before we vote for the adoption of the report. I just want to explain that this is more of a process report. It's what has happened. It doesn't include our positions as members of the committee, whether we agree with this section, that this clause or that clause. It's just a process report that must be adopted and then sent to the provinces for them to consider the issues that were raised at a national level as they interact with the two bills and the developing their voting mandates. So it doesn't include our individual or party positions for now. It's just a process that there were public hearings. These were these are the responses to those submissions by Parliament Legal Office, and also these were the responses by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. So it doesn't contain our committee or members of the committee inputs or party political party inputs for now. It's just a process report. I see the hand of Honourable Lont and Honourable Moimang in that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I do take note of what you've said, that this is a process report. I also just want to flag something, that we don't have to go into the details now. As you said, we will have the time to work through it clause by clause and raise the concerns and inputs and alternative proposals we might have. But I do want to ask that, firstly, we need to have a discussion or conversation on our role and responsibility to make sure that the provinces they've got their sufficient public hearings. There's already anecdotal feedback that I'm getting that there is some serious flaws in some of the provincial public hearings, and that would also impact us and affect us when we make our final decision. We cannot do our job properly if it wasn't done properly in the provinces. I also think we need to use the right wording, and I know this was not in the report, but also when we speak to one another, because there wasn't just a few issues that were raised. There were many valid and substantial, substantive concerns raised, and there were many concerns about the report. So by saying that there's just a few issues, that does not truly reflect on what the feedback was from stakeholders that engaged us. I also want to ask that when we have our conversations, Chairperson, that we do have it in person. It is much easier sitting around a table, looking one another in the eye, and have the conversations on all the concerns that were raised, the inputs that we get from the provinces as well, and then also be honest with one another as to which provinces didn't meet a minimum standard. Now, that is might be subjective for us, and that might also end up in the courts, but we have a responsibility to also make sure that we at least raise those concerns with one another and speak to them as well.
Thank you, Honorable Lont. With regard to the next meeting, which will be on the negotiating mandates from the provinces, that meeting will be in person. It was also reported last week. I think there's even a room number for that meeting. So we already agree that the next meeting will be in person. But also, Honorable Rotterset and myself also are part of the Joint Standing Committee on Financial Management of Parliament. It was also indicated in the meeting that a decision has been taken that all committee meetings after the 9th of September. Sorry, I don't know where I get September from. May will be in person. Unfortunately, then next week we won't have a meeting. No, we'll have a meeting on the 2nd, but meeting after the 9th will be in person. So including this one, but with regard to this one of the negotiating mandate, already we had taken a decision that it was going to be in person. Honorable Moima? Kicked out.
Yeah, I think he tried to log in again earlier, Chief.
No, I'm okay, Chair, because I don't know what's happening with my gadget today. So I had to have a standby one so that I'm not derailed in terms of the inputs. Chair, I fully concur with the process that we've outlined. That we are mainly before us dealing with the process that has unfolded, and it's important that we respect that. We are mindful, Chair, that these two bills have attracted a lot of interest, big top conglomerates, both domestic and also external. And the public hearing has also, I think, because of the three public hearings that we've had, I mean, to open the floodgates, and definitely we appreciate the interest that the public has shown in these two bills, but I agree that let's adopt the process that you have outlined, and then we send it back to the provinces, and then thereafter, so that then they have the guidance in terms of the negotiating mandate, in terms of what has unfolded at the level of the committee. In terms of flaws around public hearings at various provincial legislature, I won't get into that, Chair, until we get the mandates, so that we are not defocused from the key issues that we need to deal with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I'll come back to you, Ms. Matia. Let me take Honorable Dango and then Honorable Lont again.
Chairperson, I think when we're saying all meetings must be physical, I think we must just be conscious of the fact that the WIPS meeting, at the last meeting, had requested that the Secretary of Parliament produces a report as to progress with regard to what matters will be both in the NCOP and ALOA in Parliament physically. There was indication that only two committee rooms at that particular point in time were ready for use, that other committee rooms in fact were not ready for use, and at the next works meeting we'll probably get a report on that on that matter. But having so, I think we should just be cautious when we're saying that all meetings will be physical. It depends on what is available. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think Honorable Brother Seth may come in on this one. It seems like this decision was taken at a higher level, Honorable Dango, a higher level than the WIPS meeting, that all future meetings will be in person, because now there are also additional rooms. I think there were tenants that have been moved to accommodate committee rooms. So my understanding is that maybe your decision at the WIPRE meeting has been overtaken by a decision at a higher level than the WIPS meeting. Honorable Lent, again?
Lent is the chocolate, sir, but I mean Lent. I will react to both of them. Just, I wonder, and you can guide me on this, but before we adopt this report, I do think we must also request that we get feedback from provinces on one, the process, the type of communication that went out, the general attendance, because I already had feedback, and you can double check because that's from your home province. But by the sound of it, the first public hearings didn't go well at all. Not going into the details now, and it looks like they're now scheduling additional public hearings, which is commendable that if it didn't go well, you must schedule further, but also then correcting the mistakes that caused the first public hearings not to go that well. And we need to get the same from the other provinces also, so that when we get together and we then discuss, we have that information as well. So I do want to encourage you that we make a footnote of that in our report as well and send that request through, please.
Yeah. I don't know if we have that authority over provinces, Honorable Dang. I mean, Honorable Lond, I hear what you're saying, but I don't even know what is happening in my province with regard to the public hearings. I don't have that information. And also, what we normally do is to just get the reports from, in fact, the negotiating mandates from provinces on the understanding that due processes were followed in terms of the adverts for the public hearings, the public hearings themselves, and then the process is then back in the legislature in terms of a committee then sitting and deciding on the negotiating mandates. Perhaps Ms. Samara Ali can come in at this age, because I don't think we have authority over provinces on how to run the public hearings and the due processes. Ms. Samara?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. Indeed, Chairperson, we cannot dictate to provinces how and when to carry out their public hearings. It is only for Parliament to encourage and facilitate public hearings at this point. I will, however, undertake to speak to my colleagues in the provinces so we have a complete picture before the next meeting. If this meeting could please allow me the time to investigate the matter further, and then perhaps we would have a more comprehensive picture of what actually happened during the public hearing at the next meeting. Is that okay, Chair?
That's okay, but with regard to this report, it is our own report. It's got nothing to do with provinces. What is happening in provinces doesn't have an impact on the report itself. So we can go ahead and adopt it. Is that correct?
That is correct. Chair, it's just that I would like to give Honourable Lond and other members a complete picture as to what happened with those public hearings in the other provinces. So when it comes to negotiating mandates, there's nothing that's going to hamper our processes. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Mr. Solomon?
Yes, thank you, Chair. There was just in response to the what Shamara and Ms. Ali and Mr. Lant was raising, I just wanted to share, we have available a schedule of the provincial public hearings that we've actually kept abreast of, if you would just allow me to share that, Chairperson. What we did is that we wanted to be able to share this information with stakeholders when they requested, because I mean we anticipated this, quite a number of stakeholders would request information from us as to when and where the public hearings would be taking place. So if I can maybe just share the schedule, that this was a working document that we kept updated from the get-go. And this is information that we also shared with stakeholders on request, which captures the public hearing process of the various provincial legislatures. So here we've got the Eastern Cape, the Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwest, and Western Cape. I can confirm, Chairperson, that to date, I think that if I'm not mistaken, 7 of the 9 provinces have actually concluded the public participation process. The Free State has actually started public hearings today, immediately following the provincial briefing on the legislation. And then the only other province that's still outstanding is the Northwest province. So this is the information that we have available, Chairperson. And I can make this.
Can I request that you send it on the committee WhatsApp group?
We'll do so, Chair. I was just going to say now.
And then email later on.
Yes, I was just going to say that, Chair. And then also if I can just briefly just apologise for my wording earlier on when I introduced the report. There was substantive comments that were made, and which is, if members look at the report in total is about 85 pages long. And we thoroughly went through all submissions and captured, tried to as much as possible capture all the submissions that were made. The wording that I used earlier on was more to define just some of the areas that I was going to cover, obviously recognizing that I wouldn't be able to go through the whole report when presenting it to the committee, because it's quite a lengthy report.
All right. I think Honorable Dango, I see your hand is up. Mr. Ziz, Mr. Can you please switch off your
Chairperson, may I vote for the adoption of the report as is, and as you've outlined, we will deal with other matters at another time. Thank you.
Okay, let's do this then in terms of the rules of NCOP. Rule 153 on page 130, it says, except when a question is to be decided, business may proceed irrespective of the number of delegates present. When a question is to be decided in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution, A, committee members representing at least 5 provinces or 6 provinces in the case of a constitutional amendment must be present, and a question is agreed to if at least 5 provinces or 6 provinces in the case of a constitutional amendment vote in favor of the question. Let me end there because we're not dealing, the next one is dealing with Section 75, so we're not dealing with Section 75. Can we first establish Smart DI if we have quorum?
Do you speak to Chairperson?
Okay. We will then vote those voting in favor of the adoption of this process report. Please raise your hand. Can you help Ms. Mante with the number of those who voted for the report?
Chairperson, it seems that I've got We've got five hands. She person.
Don't forget.
Okay, is that Mr. Honorable Dudubo? I did not hear. Okay, Chairperson, in at present we've got five hands. We've got yourself, Honorable Dango, Honorable Mamarahana, Honorable Moemang, and Honorable Mashodi, voting in favor of the report, Chair.
Okay, can I ask them to lower their hands? Those that are voting against the adoption of the report, can you please raise your hands? There are no hands. Those who are abstaining, Honorable Kim, are you voting against or are you abstaining?
Sorry, Chairperson, I'll abstain.
Abstaining.
My apologies.
All right.
Yeah.
Those who are abstaining, can you please raise your hands? Okay. How many abstentions, Ms. Mati?
We've got three abstentions, Chairperson. Mr. Honorable Proud says, Honorable Lont and Honorable Boshoff. If I can just, Chair, as you indicated, just in terms of the process, members are voting as per the province. So the abstentions in terms of the provinces is KwaZulu-Natal, the Western Cape and Mpumalanga. And then in terms in favor of the report is Gauteng, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape and Free State.
Okay. So the majority of the five provinces are therefore in support of the adoption of the report.
Correct, Chairperson.
And they are and there are no those who are voting against. Yeah, that means then the report will then be sent to the provinces. We expect that the provinces will take the report into account as they will be considering the process of voting negotiating mandate. Sorry, yeah. That takes us then to the next item on our report. If you can, I don't know if you were still voting, I suggest Honorable Protester to lower your hand unless you've got another point to raise.
Chairperson, I actually do want to raise a point, but I will take my hand down.
Okay.
Chairperson, it seems to me that the provinces are still embarking on a very lengthy process.
Yeah.
And so they will obviously, are we going to send a directive to the provinces that they must take our report into consideration before they come back with their negotiating mandate?
Yes, that was the suggestion at the very start of the process, that because it's Section 76, wise provinces have this authority to, because Section 76 is also sent to the provinces.
Recording in progress.
Members of the select committee go and brief the provinces about the bills together with the representatives of the department. Some of us have done that. As it was indicated, Honorable Mosodi will be doing that in her province. So what we decided with the advice of Advocate Fanemeve, because we're checking what's the point of having public hearings in the NCOP, in the Select Committee, when the provinces themselves will have their own processes and then give us their negotiating mandate. Why do we have to to advertise and have public hearings? What happens to that report? Then the advice from the Advocate Van der Meven and Ms. Samara Ali was that let's write to the provinces that, if not right, but to inform the provinces that they should kind of delay in terms of their negotiating mandate, so that they take into account this report without imposing it on them, as they deal with the negotiating mandate, but also they must consider the report. So that's what we agreed on. So that this report is only about that. It's up to them to consider taking it into account or not taking it in account, but we're doing our part as an NCO, because the process was going to be just meaningless. Whilst in terms of the law, we are bound to have a public hearings as NCOP, but it's not clear. And then from there, what happens with regard to our own process as a select committee? Because Section 76 mainly is a matter that is dealt with by the provinces. Whilst we are also obliged to have public hearings as the NCOP select committee. To address then that issue, we were advised that let's advise provinces to delay their processes, and then we had to apply to the chairperson of the NCOP that this process is not going to be the normal 8 weeks process. It's going to be extended, and then we receive a letter from the chairperson of the NCOP agreeing to that request. Honorable Lund?
Sorry, Chairperson, before Honorable Lund, thank you, Chairperson, for that clarity, and I think that's the right position, because in our engagements, we've obviously had probably the lion's share of engagements with, you know, obviously, less the public, but with all the stakeholders, and I think it's absolutely vital that the province is taking into consideration the views of the stakeholders, the academia, the lawyers, the artists themselves, the performers. I think that's absolutely vital, whereas public participation often is just not to say that there's any less status, Chair, please don't get me wrong, but it's normally just a man in the street. So I just think it's vital, and I just want to get that from you, because I think we need to apply it with all other Section 76 bills we're working with, including, for instance, the expropriation bill, where it looks like at the moment the provinces are ahead of us in that process, because we still need to do our entire public participation process on, for instance, the expropriation bill, just so that we have that principle that we do forward it to them and say to them, look, this is our report. We've engaged the majority of the stakeholders. Please take into account what we've uncovered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Another lot?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check two things. You indicated earlier in the meeting that we will be meeting next week to discuss each province's mandate. Is that correct?
No, not next week. We have a date. It is in the program. I'll suggest that Ms. Maldia also maybe send the program, this legislative program, to the members and the WhatsApp group. But Honorable Lund, it's a tentative date. She will indicate with the dates. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's over two days, not in succession, 1 week and the following week, if I'm not mistaken. But that will be in person, in Parliament. But also it will be guided by the processes of the provinces. Today the Free State is only receiving the briefing. I think they are still going to embark on public hearings. The last time I heard from Mr. Solomons was that Northwest is still to receive a briefing from the member of the committee. So that could then affect the day that we have scheduled for the negotiating mandates, because we have to wait for these other provinces, but I'm subject to correction by Ms. Samara Ali. Those provinces that are not yet finished, should we wait for them, or if we have a particular threshold in terms of numbers, we can go ahead. Just before you come in again, if you can Ms. Samara Ali can perhaps comment on that.
Very quickly, before Samara comes in, can I maybe just give the dates for the negotiating and final mandate meetings, Chair?
Okay.
We will also circulate the legislative program to members, but the negotiating mandates are scheduled to take place on the 16th of May, and the final mandate meeting is scheduled to take place on the 23rd of May. And as in Chairperson indicated, both of those meetings will actually be physical meetings as well.
Mm. Yes. And then follow up, Honorable Law?
No, Chairperson, well, thank you for the clarity. Just had a little red flag that pop up. If we were meeting next week and there's two public holidays coming up, and we're sending the document only out today, so that's covered. And then just, I am trying to just get all my documents and ducks in a row. Can you please, through the committee secretary, send the letter to us that was sent to the NCOP chair as well as the reply, so we also just all have it on record. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think Ms. Madia will do that. The next week, we do have a meeting next week on Tuesday. We're meeting with the Department of Small Businesses Development on their annual performance plan and budget. So I just wanted to indicate that we still have a meeting because we're still going to have the budget for debates. Let me...
Sorry, I just put my hand up again. So, Chairperson, the dates that Nadia just told us now, I mean, obviously those must be very tentative because if some provinces are only receiving the briefing now and haven't even gone into public participation, I would imagine that those dates are going to be moved out by at least a month, I would imagine.
That's why I was saying they are 10-30. Or maybe let's find out from... Sorry for talking over you. Are you done, Honorable Tim?
Yes, I am. I am done. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry for that. Ms. Samara Ali, can you just say, advise what happens if some of the provinces and I don't want to say not cooperating, but they delaying the process? Should we just consider, is there a particular threshold that if so many provinces have done all the processes, they can be delayed by one or two? Can you clarify that aspect?
Chairperson, with regards to the threshold required, we would need five provinces moving forward when taking a decision. However, because of the nature of this, these two bills, I would seriously recommend that even if it means that the committee delay the meeting a week or so, we should consider that rather than moving forward with the final and voting mandates without having considered the inputs made, even if it's two provinces. With regards to the time frames, when we applied for an extension to the chairperson, it was not a pretty open-ended process, although the extension was granted due to the nature of these bills. The chairperson did not indicate the time frames within which this process must be completed. So if we had to miss out on a meeting or postpone a meeting to a later date, it wouldn't be a train smash. We have received the required permission for that. Hence, my advice to the committee would be that we'd rather delay a meeting than forego a meeting and continue with the process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I think we're done with this process for now, unless there are other concerns members want to raise. Let's then move to our next item. Honorable Jim Pritasat.
Chairperson, I'm sorry to bang on this particular drum, but I think it's just important because of all the Section 76 bills we have coming our way. There has been a legal precedent, one particular case related to the Mineral Resources Department, where it was found by our courts that we have to err on the side of full participation by all the provinces. All the provinces must err on the side of as much public participation as possible, because that particular court case says that we really have to make absolutely sure that we give full meaning to the word, to the words public participation. So to exclude provinces because they're just a bit tardy or slow in their process, I think would be most irregular and will open us up to a constitutional challenge. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you so much. I think we'll try our best, honorable team. We can also even ask the chairperson of the NCOP maybe to intervene and take the matter with the speakers of the provinces so that the committees in the legislature take this matter seriously. And honorable Moima.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I just want to word of caution, Chair, because the delay. We need to remind ourselves where we come from, as a province of the Northern Cape, our view is quite clear that the adoption of these two bills is urgent, and it must be expedited, taking into account the fact that it is not for the first time that it is before the committee. It was in the committee, before the committee in the previous. It was adopted by both houses, and therefore the delay is in stark contrast to what we seek to achieve in the industry, because the copyright regime, but also the profession, has to shift so that it make it much more easier for us artists to enter and survive in the industry, so that we are able to ensure that the copyright regime is able to be used both educational but also for developmental purposes. So the further delay as we get it from the meeting must be minimized, because there should be no reason for further delay on this matter, Chair. Like I indicated, there are many contending interests, particularly around the copyright regime, which we have all agreed that it has to be transformed. It has to be transformed so that it is able to address our developmental agenda and transformation agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I think that with regard to the processes, let's just follow the processes. If we have to be flexible in terms of the date to accommodate those, I think that there are two provinces mainly, just to accommodate them. I think I agree with the honorable team. Let's try our best to ensure that we involve all the provinces that have not yet had their public hearings. As I was indicating, that perhaps we'll have to ask the chairperson if need be to talk to the speakers of the two or three provinces. Honorable Dambo, then followed by Ms. Samara Ali.
Yeah, honorable chairperson, just to remind you that those of us that are whips will have to withdraw at 12 o'clock, and you yourself will have to withdraw at 12 o'clock to attend to a medical matter. So if all members can actually just take that into account. Thank you very much.
Okay, no, okay. But there are important matters that I think we need clarity on. We have to clarify all of them on up and down. Ms. Samara Ali, and then we go to the Department of Employment and Labour.
Chair, with regards to the processes, we are following up on the matter with the provinces directly. It's much quicker than going via the chairperson to the speaker. So on an administrative level, we are handling the situation. I will advise accordingly if there's a need to postpone the meeting of the 16th. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you so much. If you can just indicate Honourable Minister, your delegation, and introduce your delegation. Also, make opening remarks, and then indicate you will be taking us through the presentation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members. and the officials who are here from the department and parliament. I don't want to waste time because of our presentation. As you have indicated, we are led not by the PG today because he has had a particular problem in the family this morning. We have Masha Broncos, who's our COO, who will be leading with a number of DDGs and in particular the city bureaus from the different provinces. I will leave everything to her to introduce whoever is there and then to lead with the presentation. Then the Deputy Minister, we are here, will be also taking participating whenever there are questions. But I'll request you to jump out at 11:30. I'm operating from Northern Cape, Jefferson. I'll jump out for about 30 minutes at 11:30 and be back at 12. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honourable Minister. Oh, I didn't see. Oh, also greeting to Deputy Minister just now, as you were indicating that she's also in the meeting. Good morning, Honourable Deputy Minister. Ms. Nomvula, can you take us through?
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Chairperson. I can certainly do so. I would like to introduce the members of the department that are here who have joined us. I'm accompanied by the Inspector General or the DDG for Inspection and Enforcement Services, Ms. Aggie Moidua. I get that one wrong all the time and then I feel bad about it. I'm also accompanied by the DDG for Corporate Services, Ms. Bahumi Matabesi. The CFO is here, Mr. Beki Maduna. Then there are quite a number of heads of provinces here, I hear that they are having problems with connectivity. For some reason, they get kicked out and so on. So I'm going to just say that they're here, and if we call them and they're not here, then we will understand why there is a problem in terms of the connectivity. I'm also joined by the DDG for Public Employment Services, Mr. Sam Moratoba, and then quite a number of officials from the department as well as from the ministry that will be assisting us this morning with the presentation. Chairperson, if it's okay with you, if you don't mind me switching off my video because of bandwidth challenges, you know, with our colleagues at Eskom, we do have problems with when load shedding kicks in. So I'll take us through the presentation.
Can I suggest that you be done by 11:45? Because there are members that will be going to the WIPS meeting at 12.
Okay.
But I'm also leaving at 12 because I've got an appointment with a doctor.
I will do so and I will try to push it even before 11:30. Thank you, Chair. The presentation is going to be shared by Ms. Matapelo. If you could just share, or if you can get sharing rights. Chairperson, whilst she's setting up, the presentation was circulated quite some time ago to members, and I am going to assume that you have, had an opportunity to look at it. So because of the fact that we don't have a lot of time, I'm going to leave some slides in abeyance and just focus on the salient slides. If I can just see how far the presentation is, Matapelo, if you can get sharing rights. Chairperson, if I could just get a sense of from Matapelo, with your indulgence, how far she is in terms of sharing the presentation.
I see
she has, yeah. Thank you very much. So I'm going to start, thank you, with this presentation on slide 2, which gives us just a brief overview of the presentation. And when I do my presentation, the first number of items of the contents in terms of our mandate, our mission, and so forth, I'm not going to talk about in detail because this committee has had a number of occasions where we were involved in discussing these issues. Chair, can I proceed, even though we don't have the slides for the moment?
Sorry, I missed that.
I say, can I proceed, can I continue, even though we don't see the slides at the moment?
Let's check, coming.
There it is. Okay, but this is not the correct presentation. This is the financial one. If I can just have a, can we just get the other presentation open, please? This is the presentation that the CFO will do after I've done the performance information presentation. Yeah, thank you. I'm on slide number 2. It seems as if there's a challenge with our connectivity. Chairperson, if it's a...
Can I just check if Enrico is in the meeting, Ms. Mati?
Yes, he is, Chairperson, and he has got the slides as well. If he can maybe just...
Okay, let's just see if Matabele will go. If she's got a problem, then we can ask Enrico to flight the presentation. Enrico, can you flight the presentation?
Okay, Chair.
Please.
Thank you, Chair. That's why technology is wonderful until the day it doesn't work. Then you realize how frustrating it can become. Yes, thank you. That's the presentation.
It's not yet true. Click on it, Enrico, please. We are only seeing the screen, the page, not the presentation. Enrico?
Chair?
What is the problem?
Maria, can you take off the lady from giving her the co-hosting rights?
Oh.
Okay, done. So, Enrico?
Okay, Maria.
Maybe, CEO, you can just continue using your copy whilst Mr. Bazia is still struggling.
Thank you, Chairperson. So for members who have got copies of the presentation, I am going to move now to slide number 6 on the presentation. This is the slide that gives us a sense of what the impact statement of the Department of Employment and Labour is, in terms of the MTSF framework and our strategic plan indicators. So our impact statement, and that what we are working towards as a department, is a labour market which is conducive to decent employment. And everything that we do, everything that we I'm going to present to you is what we hope to be, to use to achieve that. On slide 7, I'm going to look at the government service delivery priorities and then just to link all the programs of the Department of Employment and Labour to those priorities. The only priority that the department does not actively support is priority 5. All the other priorities from 1 to 7 is actively supported by the department. The first one, a capable, ethical and developmental state, that clearly is the whole of the department, all the programs as well as our public entities. In terms of priority 2, the economic transformation and job creation, that is all our programs and entities except for the corporate services program. Priority 3, education and skills and health, that is inspection and enforcement services, public employment services, the two funds, as well as Productivity South Africa. Priority 4, consolidating the social wage through reliable and basic services, that is inspection and enforcement services and the two funds. Priority 6, social cohesion and safer communities, is labor policy and international relations, as well as priority 7, a better Africa and a better world. Chairperson, then I'm moving to slide number 16. Just to give some assurance to members that this annual performance plan of the department that we have tabled has been audited and it's been signed off by our colleagues at National Treasury, our colleagues at the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. It has been signed off by our own internal audit unit and it's been signed off by the Auditor General of South Africa. So we have submitted this plan for due diligence to all these colleagues. I'm going to focus now on slide 17 going forward. So I don't know which colleague is now sharing, but if you can
Ms. Brankos, it's me. The challenge that I'm having is that I can't see the slide numbers. So you must just guide me in terms of when I need to get to the correct slide, because the slides from my side, I can't see the numbering.
Oh, okay. The slide I'm going to talk to now is the annual performance plan. The heading of the slide is the annual performance plan. So that is about slide 17 down. If you can go on, I will tell you when you reach it.
Ms. Solon, can you make it a full slide? Maybe you'll be able to see the numbers. The numbering.
Yeah, the numbering is on the right bottom of the slide. So perhaps if we...
Maybe make it a full slide.
Because the screen that I'm looking at right now, Chair, is a full screen. And I see the numbering at the bottom of it. Can members see the full screen?
No, if there are those slides on the side, it means it's not a full screen. Yeah, go to slideshow. Click on slideshow. It's not working.
Okay, sorry. I think there might be an issue with the document itself because I'm also getting chucked out of the... just see what's going on here.
Aria, sorry. Sorry, Che. My thing is also just freezing. It just stays on the first page and it doesn't move.
I think it's working now.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I did receive a message that there were problems with the internet. So I don't know if it's a problem all of us has got with internet. And the message I received was it is affecting Teams and Zoom meetings. So it could be that this is a national problem that we are all experiencing. Thank you very much. So in terms of this slide, the annual performance plan, I'm going to indicate to the committee the four programs of the Department of Employment and Labour. And if we move to slide 18, the first one is that of administration. For this program, we have received an allocation of just over 1 billion rands for the financial year, and the CFO will take us through the detail of the allegations. This is the program that, compared to last year's annual performance plan, we have added quite a substantial number of indicators based on requests from, for example, the Department of Youth, Women and People with Disabilities, as well as other priorities that were identified. So here you will notice there are a number of indicators more. Firstly is that of the funded vacancies. Members will recall that we've had a challenge with filling our funded vacancies. We have put down an indicator that we would want to have a 7% or less vacancy rate per quarter. We have also indicated that we would want at least 49% of our SMS positions to be occupied by women by the end of this financial year. We would also want 25% of positions in the department to be occupied by young people, and then 3% of those positions also to be occupied by people with disabilities. Members will recall that we've had challenges in terms of our information security in our previous audit. So this has now been elevated to the APP so that we have an indicator to improve our information security status to 100% implementation of the roadmap that we have set for ourselves in terms of phase one. If we move to the next slide, we can look continue looking at administration. Firstly, our legacy systems to be transitioned to integrated SAP systems. Members will recall that we also had challenges around this in the audit that we've had in the past, and then also to roll out our ethics management plan. These are all new indicators on this page. The percentage of corruption and fraud cases to be finalized within 6 months of receipt will be 75%, and the remainder then thereafter will be done in a longer time frame because some of them are complicated cases. Then the percentage of consequence management cases related to corruption will be finalized within 90 days, will be 80% of those cases. Again, the remainder will be finalized, but it will take a bit longer because of the complexity of some of the cases and the involvement of other role players and third parties. If we move to slide number 20, here the business continuity plan will be evaluated and will develop and finalize the development of the business continuity plan. The financial statements is the indicator that we've had all along. This is the legislative requirement in terms of the financial statements. And then the reporting of irregular and unauthorized expenditure, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, are indicators that we've had for a number of years, well, since the start of the strategic plan. Chairperson, that takes care of administration. If we move to inspection and enforcement services, they have received a small budget of 650.5 million rand to do all the work that they have to do. And here, the indicators have stayed the same. The numbers of inspections have changed in terms of the workplaces to be inspected, 298,332, as well as 95% compliant and non-compliant employers will be issued with the relevant documentation within 14 days of the inspection. Then the percentage of non-compliant employers that are received by statutory services, in other words, if they after follow-up still don't comply, which will be settled out of court or at the CCMA or referred to prosecution, will be 65% within 30 working days. And then the program would also want to do a number of formal advocacy sessions as well as seminars, and for that they will have 4 seminars and 2 conferences to be held. These are the indicators for the inspections and enforcement services for the year 2023-24. Public employment services, they have received just over 1 billion rand to do the work that they are expected to do. And here it is the same indicators that we have had in the past. The number of work seekers to be registered will be 900,000 at the least, and will definitely be more than that. The number of employment opportunities that will be registered on the employment services system will be 110,000. and of the 900,000 registered work seekers, 250,000 will be provided with employment counseling and prepared for the world of work. Public Employment Services continues on slide 23. And here we're looking at the number of placements or registered employment opportunities that are to be filled will be 60,000. Public Employment Services will also enter into partnerships to increase their scope and work that they will do in the field of public employment services, and they will have 24 of these stakeholder agreements. And then the National Employment Policy will be developed by the end of this financial year, and that includes the policy on migration as well. Now we're going to labor policy and industrial relations. They have received 1.345 billion, and here this amount looks huge, but bear in mind that a substantial amount goes to transfer payments to the CCMA as well as to NetLag. The CFO will give us the more detail to that. So in terms of the branch itself or the program itself, they will do the annual employment equity report and the public register that they have to publish by the deadline date, as well as the development of the register. So firstly, they'll do the report and then the register, and then also the review of the national minimum wage, which must be finalized by 31 March of every year for implementation thereafter. We can continue on the next slide, please. Here, we're looking at the percentage of collective agreements that have to be assessed and verified. 100% will be done within 120 working days. And then the collective agreements that are assessed and verified within receipt will be within 60 days of receipt will be 100. The one is where they are not representative, parties are not representative, and the one is obviously where they are representative parties. Then the percentage of labor organizations applications for registration. Again, 100% will be approved or received within 90 working days. The next slide reports or talks about the progress report on our bilateral cooperation. These reports will be submitted and signed off by the minister annually as per the deadline. We will develop a number of labour market trend reports and produce and publish by 31 March, and then a number of research reports also about the impact of labour legislation. Two of these reports will be completed by March 2024. Chairperson, the slides that follow here after, from slide 28 to roughly slide 54, focuses more on provincial numbers and targets. So if we can look at the provincial numbers on slide 28, and I'm not going to look in detail to each province, but the bulk of our inspections will be delivered by KZN and Gauteng province, followed by the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, and then from there going down. The slide number 29 gives us a breakdown on the number of inspections per legislation, and I'm not going to look at it in detail. It's available for members for questions afterwards. Slide 30 looks at the distribution of work that we expect from provinces for public employment services, and again here you'll see that here's just a turnaround. The bigger bulk of the work will be delivered by Gauteng, followed by KZN, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. And the rest of the work is more or less the same if we go down to the others in terms of the registration of job opportunities, which follows the same sequence that Gauteng is expected to deliver the bulk of the work. Chairperson, I'm going to move to slide number 36. Which talks about our service delivery indicators, because they are important for all of us. The next slide, please. Thank you. So our vacancy rate, as you know, has been a challenge to us to achieve. At the moment, we're lying at 7%, but we would want to fill all our posts up to salary level 8 within 3 months of the post becoming vacant, and the senior management posts and posts in middle management within 6 months of post becoming vacant. Then we would also like to finalize our...
Just a minute, COO.
Yes.
Zibele.
Hello, sir. Yes, sir.
Please, mute your mic. There's a noise that is coming from your side.
Thank you.
Yes. Sorry.
Not to worry. Thanks, Jay. So our corruption and fraud cases, 75% of them will be finalized within 6 months, and the remaining was a year within the receipt of the case, as well as consequence management, 80%, as I have alluded to earlier, will be done within 90 days. With COVID, we have, as you all know, had to review the way of working, and we have had to provide people with tools of trade in terms of laptops, cell phones, etc. And the program has undertaken and committed to delivering 6 weeks from the date of the request, this relevant equipment to the official that is in need of it. Supply chain, so our invoices will be paid within 30 calendar days of receipt, 100% of the compliant invoices. And then 40% of our goods and services will be procured from women-owned businesses. In terms of IES, if we move to slide 37, they will resolve 90% of legitimate labour complaints within 30 working days and the remainder within 60 calendar days of registration. 85% of reported OHS incidents will be finalised within 90 calendar days, and they will issue a letter or certificate of registration of an entity within 5 days of the receipt of a valid and complete application. If we move to slide number 38, in terms of occupational health and safety, The certificates of exemption will be done within 5 calendar days of receiving the application, and the appeal on the decision of an inspector will be done within 5 calendar days of receipt of the relevant documentation. And the global compliance certificate examination, there you see, will be done within 5 days each individual step. I'm looking at public employment services in terms of the service delivery indicators on slide 39. The placement opportunities, if my colleague can just move the slide. Thank you. 60,000 of these employment opportunities that I've alluded to earlier will be filled within registered work seekers within 5 calendar days of the receipt of the opportunity. And we will register the employment opportunities within 12 hours of receipt, all of those that I've also alluded to earlier. Employment counseling to the 250,000 matched work seekers will be done within 3 calendar days of matching. And the work visa applications will be finalized, adjudicated within 14 calendar days of receipt, and the recommendations will go to the Department of Home Affairs. The registration of private employment agencies, temporary employment agencies, will be finalized within 14 calendar days of receipt. If we move to the service delivery indicators for LP and IR, here we have already alluded to that when I looked at the indicators that they have in the APP, so I'm not going to repeat this for members, as well as the second page for LP and IR. I would like to, however, look at slide 42, which is transversal service delivery standards, and this talks about complaints, suggestions, and compliments, that we would deal with 95% of our complaints, etc., within 24 hours of receipt. This is on slide 42. And we'll resolve 95% of complaints within 14 calendar days. Chairperson, you know that we have long queues at our labor centers, so we would also going to prioritize queue management again in terms of the people with disabilities, the elderly and expectant mothers. as well as to screen our client services to make sure that they are correct, directed to the right service area. Chairperson, excuse me, slides 44 to about slide 51-52 takes care of the strategic risks and mitigations, and if it's acceptable to you, I will not present that, so that I allow the CFO time to present the financials for the department, if that is acceptable to you, Chairperson.
It's okay, yes, you all.
Thank you. Thank you. That takes care then of my presentation. I'm going to ask Mr. Maduna, the CFO, to do his presentation on the financials to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Mr. Maduna?
Good morning, Chair, honorable members.
Morning.
I will take you through the financial side of the presentation, starting from slide one, where I think our main focus in terms of the finances has been on the provincial side. The department has an allocation of 4.1 billion. Out of that 4.1 billion, 1.185 billion is allocated to provinces. This represents 29% of our budget allocation, the expenditure in the provinces, on the total budget. However, the transfers and subsidies to our public entities takes about one quarter of our budget. So since it's just managed by SLA with public entities, so in my presentation, I also indicate what is actually available for the department at the disposal of the department. So if I deduct the transfers, I think that there probably were two slides at the end that I'm going to go through towards the end. If I deduct the transfers and subsidies, then our budget allocation for provinces increases to 51%, which then means that out of our 4.1 billion budget, when we exclude transfers and subsidies, the percentage that is spent in the provinces is 51%. I have indicated, well, I think I've put a historical information of the expenditure in the provinces. Yes, in terms of the provinces, there are provinces that have that are overspending, and there are those that are underspending. That should not be an issue, because when we then reconcile our budget to programs, we are able to set off the minuses from one province within the same economic classification using the shifting of budget to the overspending or the under and overspending of one province against the other. Yes, overall, we had an overspending of 60, but we managed that within the budget that has been allocated when we consolidate to the programs, even with head office. Therefore, the underspending, the overspending, that one that appears there of 60 million disappears. That means that overall, the department is not overspending on its budget, because then when we consolidate with head office, the minuses that also disappear. I'm not going to go through each province what has been allocated, unless maybe members would probably have specific questions, just on the slides to indicate the total amount that was allocated to provinces in 2022-23 financial year. Next slide. Next slide indicates that information in terms of economic classification with the same 1.185 billion to the provinces and the expenditures that has happened. as per the economic classification, same with the 60 million overspending, which is set off at consolidation. Next slide. This slide indicates the amount of money that is allocated to provinces in the 2023-24 financial year. Targets, there has been, I think, on the performance slide that has been presented by the COO I think he presented them in terms of each program. So here I've got it per province, per province. One point that I need to mention is that the budget in the current year has minimally decreased, simply because treasury in our allocation for 2023-24 shows a total decrease in the allocation, which should be shared by all the programs in the departments, excluding transfers and subsidies, because that is managed differently in terms of the SLAs. So our overall budget for 2023-24 shows a decrease, and that decrease has been allocated on all the programs of the department, which then results in the provinces has to take the 10 million roundabout that decrease in the overall allocation for them as well. Next slide. This slide indicates the budget that has been allocated. The presentation for the COO went through the allocation per program. So even my slide as well indicates that in the current year, 2023-24, the program administration in various provinces have been allocated this amount, totaling 239 million rands, just for administration only. The next slide. The targets for the administration have been tabulated in the performance information, in the performance presentation, the column. The next slide is the allocation for IES overall. The province's share on the total allocation for the program IES totals to equal 597 million rand.
The slides are not moving. They are only moving on the side. The main slide are not moving. It's not moving. That's yeah.
Mine is moving.
We've been on these provincial ones for a long time. The allocation, the budget information on provincial one.
Okay, we covered administration. The next one, the next one was IES. You are far ahead now. Go back. Yes, before this. This administration, the next one is IES. Let's go forward. Yes. The IES has been allocated 597 with each provincial allocation. The total for the program that has been allocated to IES provinces is 597. The next one will be public employment services. Public employment services, for their total allocation, 299 million has been allocated to provinces, with each amount allocated in the provinces indicated there. The last one is LPNIR. LPNIR, out of their budget, they have allocated 38 million in the provinces for their activities in the provinces. The next slide covers the transfers and subsidies, which are linked to programs. One, I think it indicates which entity has been allocated. There are mainly two programs in the department that have got transfers and subsidies or entities linked to them. The first one is public employment services. In their budget, the transfers and subsidies that are allocated to them, well, to public employment services, is designated groups, supported employment services, productivity SA, UIF, compensation funds, and GTEC. So the total amount on the transfers and subsidies that is sitting on public employment services is 628 million, with the expenditure on each one of them. UIF, the reason why UIF we have allocated 1 rand or 1,000 rand is to keep that line active, so that in case UIF needs to be funded to fiscal, we do have a line item for it. So we always keep it at 1,000 rand so that line doesn't disappear. It remains active in the eventuality that, yeah, there is a requirement for UIF to be funded to fiscal. Currently, UIF is not funded to fiscal because of their own act in terms of the contribution by the employer and the employee to UIF. And compensation funds, we are not funding compensation funds, but this is a provision for injury on duty on public servants, the non-service public servants. That's the amount that is allocated to the department to pay claims received from compensation fund in case of the injuries on duty, the officials claim there. So we also not funding compensation fund on any other matter unless it's the injury on duty. That 18 million is precisely for that. GTEC is also one of the employment projects that has been funded, that has been allocated to the department, although for a limited period. It's not going to be there forever, but for the current year, we have 356 million rand. LPNIR, Labour Policy and Disaster Relations. Next slide. Yes. These are the transfers and subsidies that reside in LPNIR. One of them is ILO, our affiliation to ILO, or our interaction with ILO goes through this program. So there's that budget that we have. The ARLAC, African Regional Labour, is also funded through this program. And CCMA and NEDLAC is also sitting in this program with a total amount of just about 1.1 million that is sitting on transfers and subsidies sitting on LPNIR. In total, the transfers and subsidies for the two sitting in two programs is equals to 1.797 billion rand, which I indicated earlier that it represents 1/3 of our budget is through transfers and subsidies. That, I think, is coming at the end of the financial presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maduna. Any other emphasis the COO you want to make?
Chairperson, no, thank you. That is all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. At this stage, we will open the floor to members of the committee to ask questions, and then we get responses. We note your question, Honorable Matthew. I will ask the committee secretary to help us to read it out. Are there Honorable Boshoff? Are there any other hands, honorable members?
myself, Chair, I think my colleague is doing it.
All right. Honorable Bosso, followed by Honorable Moimang, and then we take the written question by Honorable Matibula. Honorable Bosso.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not switching on my video due to bandwidth problems. I'm on a 4.5-hour load shedding schedule. I see Brenda has got one of the questions that I want to pose, but it's with regard to all UIF offices where we have been inundated with calls regarding the long queues. So if we could speak to it more broadly and not just on the Giani branch in Zanin. Then I'd also like to know with regard to the UIF, in the report it says it's mandated to alleviate poverty to all unemployed workers who qualify. Unfortunately, how we also inundated with calls from the public who are struggling to receive their benefits. It takes months and months, sometimes years, before an application is finalized. And I would like to be informed as to what the problems might be in this regard. Why are people struggling to receive back their so-called subsidy or payments to UIF, and why they are waiting months for this to be executed? Then I'd also like to know, in the report on employment services, they speak of an app. I'd just like to know if it did go online on the 1st of April, and then in the report as well, speaking about the youth centres built in 2023 that were going to be given Wi-Fi, has this taken place, and is it at all these youth centres? And then finally, the supported employment enterprises. Mpumalanga is still a province that does not have a supported employment enterprise entity. Can we be advised as to why not, and is the department looking into creating this supported employment enterprise? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Bosoff. Honourable Moima.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. The starting point, Chair, is to appreciate the presentation made by the department, because looking at the key performance indicators and targets for 2023 around their program, admin, inspection and enforcement services, public employment services, it clearly indicates that there is a positive response by the department in terms of the policy directive issued by the president. More particularly the line of march also given to the street entities, those that were tasked with the coordination of all efforts to create jobs and reduce unemployment. However, in the administration, it was indicated that there is an additional responsibility given to the administration program. But the clarity that I want to seek in relation to that is the fact that there is a decrease which to me sort of creates a bit of a challenge, because the administration's overall budget declined by 6.85%, which
it's close to between 5 million in nominal terms. But there is an additional responsibility given. Will they be able to execute those additional responsibilities in the face of the decline in the budget of the administration? In their sub-program of the ministry, there is also a decline of 5.69%. We expect the ministry, both the minister and the deputy minister, to be on the ground ensuring that they exercise oversight over a number of areas. But amongst them, I think what is also key is the emphasis on the migration labor policy. The fact that there has been tension between foreign truck drivers, but it's not only that, the tensions between the locals and the employees from our neighboring countries, which expectations that there has to be political leadership given. And if that has to happen, I'm also given the fact that this is the last 12 months of this administration, it's sort of a racist one's eyebrows, but I suspect there might probably be reasons as to how will that be executed. The second point, Chair, that I want to canvass is on program two. Program two, which deals with inspection and enforcement services, particularly its emphasis on the realization of decent work. I think the key thing there, which emerged from the presentation, is the emphasis on regulating unemployment and employment conditions through inspection and enforcement. But if you look at the budget presented, which gives us comfort, is that there is a 5.2 million increase in real rents, which if you compare it to the last to the 2022-23 budget, it has six programs: the management and support services, the occupational health and safety, registration, inspection and enforcement services, compliance and monitoring. But all those five programs, there is a decrease. The only one that has seen an increase, I think, is the compliance, monitoring, and enforcement services, which must be appreciated. But I think the question that one wants to pose is, given this decrease, which is a bit minimal, will the department be able to ensure that across all provinces, because it was quite clear in terms of the presentation, each province has a share of this program. But I think the decrease is a concern. Maybe they can just probably give us some comfort in terms of the decrease. But we must also appreciate the fact that the program that deals with inspection and enforcement services is quite critical. Now on the public employment services, there is a concern that probably has to be addressed. I see that the it is expected that the Presidential Employment Initiative at some point might be coming to an end. Maybe they can just give us clarity on that, because given the new mandate of the department, there is an expectation that there has to be a much more rigorous program in terms of this. We note that the supported employment enterprise has received an increase. But what is concerning is this a decrease at an average of 10.6% that is taking place from 1 billion in 2022-23 to 725.6 million in 2025. Why is the Presidential Employment Initiative coming to an end? If they can probably give us a reason in terms of their conceptual framework. The last one, Chair, will be on the labor policy and industrial relations. We note that this program is meant to facilitate the establishment of an equitable and sound labor relations environment. And its sub-programs also talks to that. But clearly, I think what we just need to also look into is the point that was raised by the CEO in terms of the yearly assessment of the national minimum wage in the foreseeable future. The tools that was referred to, what are the tools entail? But also the last point will be the issue of a net lag. Clearly, what is quite clear is that there is a real increase in terms of that. But it might be important just to, in terms of, I mean, the focus of NADLAC, it could be an area that we could explore, Chair, just to invite them at some point to come and make a presentation. But I think what is quite clear is that this is the only program that has received an increase. Other than that, the rest indicate a decrease. But we appreciate the fact that the CCMA received the largest share of the program budget at 1 billion, which must be appreciated given its centrality and also its proximity to the provinces in terms of resolving an employee-employer dispute. Other than that, Chair, I'm happy with the presentation has made. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Maima. Actually, the NADLAC, in terms of our second term program, it is part of that program. We have invited NADLAC together with the social partners, including the Department of Employment and Labour. Can we ask Ms. Madia Solomon to read out the questions of Honorable Matevula? She's got connectivity problems.
Will do, Chair. The questions of Honorable Matevula is as follows. What is your department doing to address the challenges of long lines, especially in the Department of Labor, Hiani branch and the Zanin branch in Lopani in Limpopo, as community members have had to sleep over in order to be assisted? Number two, when will your department assist farms in its Sateli area in Zanin in Mopani, as farm workers fail to comply with labor laws in some farms? They are not complying with occupational health standards and health regulations, as farm workers is had to bring their own water from home to drink, and other farm workers are working without protective clothes and are ill-treated. Question number three, what impact does load shedding have in creating jobs as many small businesses are struggling to cope in closing down their businesses and many people are losing their jobs? And question number four, can we have a breakdown of the numbers for province in corruption cases?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry, Chair. I've also written one, please.
Can
you read? Thank you.
All right. Can you read the one of the Honourable Boshoff, Ms. Mati?
Okay, my apologies. I missed that. With regard to fraud and corruption, how many cases are currently still outstanding? And how many employees in this department are on suspension and are receiving their monthly salary? That's the question from Honourable Boshoff.
Thank you so much. Honourable Dango?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, do we also look at the performance of SOEs and particularly the performance agreements of staff at SOEs? If I can just be guided on that.
And what happened, it depends on the committee, Honourable Dango, because of the limited time we have as a select committee. Usually in case of a portfolio committee, the portfolio committees usually would invite the department together with its entities. The department will table its APPs, and also the individual entities would also do the same. But in the case of NCOP, we don't have, because they would have the whole day, for example, not just the from 10 to 1 as we usually do. So that's why they are able to bring together the department and its entities. So most of the portfolio committees do that. But if they don't do that, maybe in one meeting, they will also give opportunity to the entities as well as part of the program. So it's up to us as a committee then if we want to schedule a APP presentation for any of the entities of the department, whether it's CCMA, NEDLAC, even those that are close with the department, like compensation fund and UI.
Can I suggest that we do invite the department to bring the SABC along?
To bring?
The SABC.
No, SABC belongs to communication committee, not to our committee.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they would oversee it there. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Perhaps the question, I just want to check COO. I see that in particular regard to the inspection and enforcement services program, mainly it's numbers, the numbers of inspections. It's difficult to assess performance in terms of the inspection and also the stages, you know, when the inspector appears, go to a workplace. How do you then assess whether he or she takes the next step, for example, the enforcement? And also maybe the department in the long run take the matter to the statutory processes. How do you assess performance with regard to that, because there could be a likelihood that the inspector just pop in a workplace, talk to workers, talk to management, and then go and never come back. But in terms of the steps that we are having there, there are so many inspections that are going to be taking place, but there's no clarity in terms of whether all those other processes after the inspector has come into a workplace, whether there will be follow-up in terms of the enforcement, in terms of also the statutory processes, if there's no compliance, all those processes, how do you measure those, whether those are taking place? The next question is around the issue of employment, the public employment services. In fact, my focus is on the department data database. You know, we deal with the other departments. There are about 8 departments that we deal with as this committee and its sister committee that meets on Wednesdays. Most of these departments talk about jobs that will be created as part of their inputs as departments, whether those jobs are taking place in the private sector or within the public service. I wanted to check whether the departments and entities also tap in from your database. For example, this afternoon, the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, in its report that it will be tabling this afternoon, it talks about the creation just in this financial year of 1 million jobs. Wondering whether they make use of the database that the department has. The last point is on the issue of the labor policy and the industrial relations. I know, for example, that there would be trade unions that would be under administration, but we don't get that kind of a report. I don't know if there could be a key performance area around that, because sometimes, like you were indicating with regard to resolution of areas of discipline, 75%, for example, whether there could be a performance area with regard to the administration of unions, because some unions would be under administration forever. For example, I know there's one union that I know that is under administration and has been under administration for a long time. Can we have a resolution with regard to that particular union or any other unions that are under administration or any employer organizations that are under administration? At this stage, I will ask, before you respond, CEO and the team, I will ask Honorable Moiman to take over the chairing as I'm preparing to leave the meeting to go to see the doctor, as I indicated earlier. Over to you, Honorable Moiman.
Chairperson, if I can also withdraw at this stage, join the Joint Works Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Less than also a note the withdrawal, you know that you will be consulting with the medical practitioners and also Honorable Dango. Can we then give over to the CEO and the team to respond?
Thank you, Acting Chair. I'm going to ask that all the questions around public employment services be answered by Mr. Moratoba, as he is responsible for that area. I'm going to ask that all the questions on inspection and enforcement services be answered by the Inspector General, so that she takes us through all the questions there. I'm going to ask that the questions on fraud, corruption, as well as, all those questions be answered by the DDG Corporate Services. The issues around queues and so on, I will take care of them at the end of the question, as well as do the questions in terms of the UIF and LP and IR, where they were questions and not just comments that we take note of. So, Chair, if you will allow, can we start with public employment services and allow Mr. Moratoba then to respond to quite a number of questions that were asked of him. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, CEO O, and thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members and colleagues. The questions by Honorable Boshoff there were two. The one is on the application of ESSA, whether it went live on the 1st of April. The answer is that no, it will only go online on the 8th of May. And that has to do with some of the technical challenges that we experienced around the self-licensing. And we're talking about the new ESSA. However, the legacy system is still operational. Question around our expansion to Mpumalanga to establish effect there. Currently, and I'll link that to a question raised by Honorable Moiman around the allocation to SEE that has been very marginal. Currently, we suspended the issue around the expansion.
Chair, we can't hear me back, so I'll speak to him. Thanks, eh?
Apologies. It looks like the CEO was engaged.
Question, should I proceed, Honorable Chairperson?
Yes, it looks like Honorable Boshoff has a challenge. Honorable Boshoff, are you okay?
Yes, it was just when Mrs. Bronkhorst was not on mute that I couldn't catch what the speaker was saying. Thank you.
Okay, great. Over to Mr. Maradona.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think on the Mpumalanga one, we have suspended the expansion until such time that the National Treasury can allocate sufficient funding. We know that currently the status of the economy and the allocation to PES has been restricted, and as such, we don't have sufficient funding to can establish the factories. Obviously, this will also depend on the factories getting sufficient business, because from other factories, we will be able to raise revenue that will give us sufficient surpluses to can establish or expand our footprint to Mpumalanga. It has been a matter of concern, and we believe that in a year or two's time, we will revisit that issue. The decrease in the allocation of PES raised by Honorable Moiman, yes, it is true that the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative budget allocation was for a 3 years period. We are engaging the National Treasury together with the Office of the Presidential
Did we lose you?
Chairperson, it sounds as if he was kicked out. Could we move to some other questions and allow him to rejoin?
Okay, yeah, let's allow your team to then...
okay. Can we then please get responses from the Inspector General on the questions on inspection and enforcement services? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, all protocol observed. In terms of inspections and enforcement services, there were three questions. The first one from Honorable Matebula was referring to visits to farms in, I think it said, Lisitele. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Area of Sanin, the farms around there, the visiting of those farms. Trying to put it on the table that our inspections are based, excuse me, and this also includes us responding to issues that have been raised in terms of complaints and just things that people pick up in terms of a non-compliance. So I may not be able to provide specific details with regards to the farms that are being referred to, but I know that we have visited a number of farms, and if we're to get details in that farm regarding that farm specifically, then we'll be able to visit and make sure that there is compliance with our laws. In terms of what you raised, Chair, and how the decrease in the budget is going to affect work that you do, you pinpoint at certain areas. We put a certain level of reliance on partnerships. We found this to be quite helpful in terms of consolidating resources and make sure that we coordinate our efforts and are able to achieve more in that regard. So we do conduct a number of coordinated inspections that also include other government departments, depending on the nature of the inspections that you're conducting. We've got a number of MOUs, both internally and externally. And we found that, Chair, this type of approach does, to a greater level, assist us to sort of make up where we lack in terms of financial resources. We don't anticipate that the minimal reduction is going to have a huge impact on the work that we do. Excuse me. And then in terms of the last question that was raised by Honorable Khan, his question was our targets and numbers, in particular the inspections, and how then do we ensure that when an inspector goes out to conduct inspections, they do what they're supposed to do. Chairperson, our work is quality assured. We also have a case management system. We've got processes that oversee the work of the inspector from a planning process all the way to a verification process. So immediate supervisors are quite involved, first of all, in the area of allocation of work. So they'll make sure that they allocate a certain number of workplaces to various inspectors. And during the inspections themselves, if there's non-compliance that is picked up, we've got a standard that says where there is non-compliance, relevant notices need to be issued within set time frames. And each and every step that is taken by the inspector has got to be documented, and there's got to be a portfolio of evidence, and this has got to be captured on the system as well. And if an employer continues to not comply after our notice has expired, because our notices have got different lifespans ranging from 15 days to 60 days, so at the expiry of that notice, if there's still no compliance, then there'll be referral to various courts and the CCMA, depending on which law has been violated. And even at that point, there is some quality assurance that takes place, and there's also standard that talks to referral for prosecution. So in a nutshell, if every part in the cycle of the work of the inspector has got a quality assurance process, and when all is said and done, there must be an inspection report for each and every inspection that shows exactly the cycle and what has happened. And to top it all, in terms of our consolidated report, I'll just backtrack a little bit, Chair. Under our case management system, the supervisors have got a role of quality assurance, so there's no inspection that gets reported and captured on the system and quality passed without the involvement of the immediate supervisor. And their precise role is to make sure that there's an element of quality that is added there. And then there's a layer that we add in terms of verifying of our performance information, both from all the internal structures, also including AG, right at the end. Chair, I think those were the questions that were directed to inspections.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Morutoba has rejoined us.
Okay, beautiful. Let me take the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The question raised by yourself around the labor migration policy, we are quite aware of its urgency. We have gone through the public comment stages and have incorporated comments. We are now going to NEDLAC during the May-June period. We hope that we will conclude those discussions then, and we will go back to Cabinet around August, and hopefully we will get approval to refer the final policy and bill to Parliament. The question around, I know this issue around service level agreement was not directed to us on the SABC, but the issue is that when we transfer money to entities as the department, like in our program, you have seen that we have a number of entities. There are service level agreements that are concluded between the program signed by the DG as a basis of transfer, and the boards responsible for the entity assist us in providing oversight of the entity. And just on Honorable Rice's question around the database of employment, currently Section 10(1) of the Employment Services Act says employers may register opportunities with the department. In other words, is that there is no compulsory registration. So government departments and private bodies register opportunities with the department on voluntary basis. We don't compel them to do so. They register also on the Youth Mobi. Our wish is that they register all these opportunities with us, so that we can reach out to as many young people as we can. And with our service delivery improvement, we are hoping that we will get there. I think that the other questions raised by, I think there was a question on the budget which was repeated on the decline that is due to the current allocation. And the FEE, I think the allocation has been stable. We have not received a major increase. Currently, the entity is running on a deficit of about 25 million. And we are hoping that we will do all other means to secure more business as the first point, but to also see from the various savings in the department on how best to assist the entity, especially on the compensation of employees. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you.
Chairperson, yes, thank you.
Ms. Masha Broadcast.
Thanks, Jay. I will allow the DDG for Corporate Services to respond to the issues around fraud, corruption, and thereafter the CFO to speak to the budget questions that were asked, I think, by yourself. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members and my colleagues. The question on the corruption case, let me start with the number of employees that are currently on suspension. We've got 10 people in the department that are currently on suspension, and these are the alleged UIF fraud cases in the Gauteng province. And then the corruption cases per province, I've got a table. I don't know whether, Chair, you'd want me to go through the table, and I was thinking, because it's quite detailed, it's information that I can provide later in writing, but I'll just give you the cases as at, let me just see here, as at quarter three,
Yeah, it's at quarter three, Cape Province, Western Cape. We've got 15 cases. Northern Cape, we've got 31 cases. Limpopo, we had 44 cases that were pending. Mpumalanga, we had 33 cases. Free State, we've got 5. KZN, we've got 146. Northwest, we've got 18. Eastern Cape, we've got 8. Gauteng Province is the highest with 184. And head office, we only have two cases. So these are, they come to a total of 486 cases, corruption cases within the department that either have been referred to such, let me say, out of the 486, 26 have been referred to South African Police Services, and others are going through cases for, they've been recommended for disciplinary action. Chairperson, that's all from my side. I think as the COO had said, I thought I will answer to the reduction on the budget of administration, but maybe he can respond to the one on ministry. The additional targets that we have under administration, specifically under my branch, corporate services, those additional targets, yes, indeed, they would need additional capacity, but what we learned to do and what we ended up doing is that we will use the existing administrative staff and the capacity that we already have to increase to carry on and reporting on the additional targets that were added on the annual performance plan. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Any outstanding one?
Yeah, there's the ministry budget, and then I'll take the others that are outstanding, Chair.
Brilliant.
So see if I can just talk to the one of the ministry.
The decrease on the ministry budget is just not only the ministry. I think it's a program one administration. It's no knowledge that the budget, I think ever since COVID, the budget, the allocation of the department ever since COVID has had some challenges, and there's been quite a number of budget cuts that have been implemented over the years from COVID till to date. And there has been a sensitivity of not affecting the core department, the core programs. So the main program that has been adversely affected by the decrease in budget, both for the department, has mainly been the administration. And the admin, well, ministry, DG, corporate services and finance, I think administration. So whenever there is a decree, administration has been a target, and inadvertently, the elements of program one, which is ministry, DG, corporate services and finance, are affected by this. And somehow for us to absorb the decrease in budget, the decrease, well, most especially directed to program one, those programs, will be affected. Unfortunately, that's the situation currently, until such time that maybe the whole budget is increased, they will be looked into. And so far, we've been able to manage to undertake all the activities with our decreased budget. So we'll see how it goes, whether we do get increases in budget, in which case all the decreases will be reversed. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you. Chair, if you will allow me to answer then to respond to the other questions. The issue of the asked by the chairperson on the unions that are under administration. The administration issue of unions is a legal process. The courts set up the conditions, and it's not something that we can become involved in or interfere in, because it's a purely legal process. So that is something that whilst we take note, excuse me, it's not something that we can, as a department, manage because it's the legal process that is unfolding. I've taken note of the comments about NetLAC, and I think the chairperson has explained around NetLAC. The issues of long queues at the labor centers asked by Ms. Matavula and Ms. Brosoff indeed is a concern to us as well. These are the unintended consequences of load shedding, which sometimes takes 4 hours out of a workday. And not all labor centers as yet have got generators where we can say we can do uninterrupted service. Generators bring their own challenges with them as well. The other issue is that we have, the UIF has approved the appointment of an increase of staff across provinces of close to 4,000, and they are in the process of recruitment and selection of these people so that we can assist people with service delivery in terms of that. Included in that is a queue management system so that we can also assist the clients as they come in and manage the queues and the numbers of people that we service every day. The UIF has also invested in Wi-Fi routers so that we can allow clients to do their own work, those who are computer savvy, so that they can assist themselves with their online systems. There's a USSD that is rolling out within the next few weeks, as well as the UIF app, which is a self-help process again, so that we can cut the queues at the labor centers. The numbers of people who wait long for benefits, I think it would be advisable if we can get those particulars so that the commissioner can look into that. Where claims are delayed, it's often because of a challenge in terms of either non-reconciliation with Department of Home Affairs or where there are challenges around banking details and so forth. But if I can ask that the honourable member provides the commissioner with the particulars so that they can escalate and deal with these, because it's unacceptable. We acknowledge that it's totally unacceptable that people have to wait for money, and years is beyond unacceptable. Chairperson, thank you. I think I've dealt with everything now. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Bronkhorst. Honourable Sanya, is that an old hand?
No, it's not. It's a follow-up to the question on corruption and the suspension, more pertinently to the suspension. Could we be given the cost to the department with regard to these 10 people on suspension, because they are now sitting at home receiving their salaries, and when do they expect these cases to be finalized? Thank you, Chair. Oh, before I sign off, just to Mrs. Bronkhorst, what I normally do with these queries is I send all my queries. He then, on my behalf, interacts with the commissioner, and we then take it from there. Cases have been resolved, but the fact still remains that why do we have to intervene? Why is the department not able to finalize this? Why must I speak to my colleague, who must then speak to the commissioner to resolve the issue?
Thank you, Honourable Boshoff. I see Honourable Matavula's hand is also up. You can take the floor, Honourable Matavula.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know whether you can hear me. I've got load shedding in my area.
Yes, you are very audible.
Okay, Chairperson, I have put the names of the farm on the chat because I heard that the COO requested the name of the farms. So if it is possible, I was asking if they can visit those farms as soon as possible, because it's been long, the workers have been complaining about this issue in these farms. The inspectors who are around this area, when they go there, they take bribes and crates of oranges, don't assist those workers. So I wish the department can quickly go there and assist those farm workers. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Why don't you name those farms? Because I'm trying to look at the chart.
Okay, they are named.
Okay. That.
I have named them, a Chair. They.
All right. I suspect this.
Yes.
I suspect it's my gadget. Let me.
Yeah, I think it's your gadget. I've named them. Yeah.
Let me hand over to Mrs. Bongost.
Chair, thank you very much. In terms of the follow-up question, excuse me, we will have to provide you with the financials for the people on suspension, Chair. I don't think we have, unless I'm wrong, we have the details of each of these readily available now. And then I agree with you, Ms. Boshoff, it's unacceptable that you have to intervene, that people do not do their work. And where we do find that people do not do their work, consequential management is taken against officials, because we find that service delivery and time service delivery for us is one of the most important things for the reason of existence for this department. And it is unacceptable that you have to intervene. Unfortunately, it happens. We work with people, and where we find out that some things are not right, we take corrective action. Thanks, Chair. We'll check in the chat the names of those farms, and Inspector General will then action that appropriately. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Bronkhorst, I guess now is the time for us to give over to the DM to then the final word before we close this item. Is the DM on the platform? Ms. Bronkhorst?
Chairperson, I will just check. I know she was on the... she is on the platform. She's in the meeting. But I don't know if there's another Ohanian that has kicked her out again. But
okay.
I see she is.
All right. In that event, can I then take this opportunity? Maybe before that, Maria?
Yes, Chair.
Thanks for guidance. We are done now with this.
Yes, Chair. This one, we're done with this item. The department, the DTIC, is expected to start with the committee at 2 o'clock, Chair.
Okay. All right. In that situation, then, because I'm afraid to give a closing remark on this one before the Deputy Minister. Can you give her a call, please?
No, I'm here, Chair. Thanks. No, I think we are on point. The Minister has been part of this meeting, and I think the Minister is the one who will close the meeting. Chair, if you have to see me, I'm trying to open my...
Okay.
No, I was saying thank you so much for your acknowledgement of us in the session. We are part of you. Nothing we can do without you. We will do everything in our power to make sure where you lack some information, we'll try our best to make sure that we give you the necessary backup and information that you are seeking for. But back to you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear Maloy, for that, for those remarks. Minister?
Chairperson, you will recall that Minister requested or said that he would leave the meeting at 11:30.
At 11:30, I think you are right. I don't
think he has rejoined us again.
Okay. Let me, on the remarks made by the DEM, then take this opportunity to
to express a word of gratitude to her and also the team for honoring our appointment, which is mainly geared towards ensuring that as we prepare for our last remaining 11 to 12 months, there is a semblance of convergence on the work that we are doing, taking into account the fact that, like as we have indicated, the programs as outlined indeed gives us comfort in terms of the synergy given by the department in terms of its work. But more than that, I think what is quite critical to us is the fact that it builds on the work as led by the president. We note that there is that a convergence between the key issues that were highlighted in SONA. We note that there's no substantial difference to the labor sector when comparing SONA 22 and SONA 2023 as job creation remains at the center of the national agenda. But more than that, from the presentation made, clearly we can note the fiscal sustainability and its impact on the key performance indicators of the department, mainly the administration, mainly the inspection and enforcement services, the public employment services, labor policy and industrial relations. It is quite clear that we have a lot of work to do, but also as the Select Committee on Parliament, the key areas that we are focusing on, given the complexities that we are going through, particularly with our approach towards addressing unemployment and inequality, the issues of ensuring that there is transparency, we have a role to play to ensure that there is stability in our government, so that we are able then to ensure that the department's work is able to run smoothly. And on that note, let me then allow the team to have a wonderful afternoon with us in the Select Committee. At 2 o'clock we'll be taking another department. So on that note, thank you, DM and your team. You are now excused.
Thank you, Jay.
Yes. Members, let's then take this opportunity to probably then adjourn for a while, and then we'll come back at 2. So then please we can take a bit of research. It has been a marathon since this morning. Is that okay, Maria?
Absolutely,
Chair.
Sorry, Chair. I'll be using the same link.
Maria, can you guide us?
Yes, Ms. Bashoff. Yes, Ms. Bashoff, we're using the same link.
Are we recused?
Honorable Chair, are we recused?
Yes, GM.